There you go.
Why I can't talk about that one instance because it involves...
Hush, Joe. Let them do the interview now.
Well, technically, you're going to do the interviews. Because we want to hear what you got to say, not what we want to say.
Well, and the best thing for you to do is probably to start asking questions, you know. Because we started off at the beginning.
I want you to start off with landing the soul and what went on there.
We didn't land at soul.
I mean, it's intro.
Yeah, why don't you, you start off with your landing procedures, when you went, what you saw. I think what we're after is what you saw, what you smelled, what you felt.
Yeah.
Okay.
As much detail as you feel comfortable giving.
Johnny, you want to start? You want me to start?
Excuse me, I'll tell you. Well, first off, the Korean War broke out in June 25th, 1950. And everybody was on leave, and the Liberty and all that were called back to their base. And all leaves were canceled. And so I was at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And both of us were in 1st Tank Battalion, 1st Marine Division. And after we left Camp Lejeune, we went to San Diego, California, to load all of our equipment and food and everything else. And after we got that loaded, it took us about 2 weeks there to do all that. And then we left San Diego and went to Japan on a troop ship.
Kobe, Japan?
Yep, got to Japan, Kobe. And we were just lucky that day. We got right in the middle of a typhoon. And the ship, we were tied up to the pier right at the warehouse where everybody stowed all their gear till they could get it to your company area or whatever. And that's the first time I'd ever heard of anybody abandoning ship while you're tied up at a wharf. But that's the signal they give us, you know. So they had landing nets over the side of the ship, and we started going down then. So after we got to Japan, I think we stayed there probably, that was pretty close to 2 weeks, I believe. And there's where we started combat loading the LSTs for the landing. Because we didn't know where we were going to land. We knew we were going to Korea, but we didn't know where. So we got on these LSTs. They're American-made, but Americans, the United States had turned them over to the Japanese, and they were manned by Japanese. And what the Japanese ate were a bunch of stuff that we didn't know what it was, but fish heads and rice were one of them. If you knew anything about an LST, they got a round bottom, and when they're not rolling from side to side, they're going up and down. And they're not very fast, but most of the time they won't even outrun their own smoke. So we were smelling diesel fuel, all that Japanese food they were eating. And my personal experience at this time, I was praying to get off of that ship. I didn't care what it was like on the land. I just wanted to get off of that ship because I was sick. I was bad sick. I'd had to die to get any better. But September 15th, about 5 o'clock in the morning, we manned our stations and then made a run for the shore at Wamedo Island. And in Korea, at Incheon and Wamedo is just a little island. It's got a causeway that goes over to the town of Incheon. And tied for, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks during the year, rises and falls 30 feet. We had picked the right time to go in, and General MacArthur had done that. So we made the, I don't know whether Joe was on my ship or not, but we made the landing. The tide was just going out when we made our run. And we got stuck in the mud, and the water went out and left us. And we were high and dry. And when I saw that town burning and everything, I changed my mind. I said, Lord, let me stay on this place. It's funny now, you know, the things you think about. So after the landing at Incheon, we were supposed to go on up and take Kempo Airfield, which is right outside of Sewell. And we're supposed to be there and go up and take Sewell. Okay, Joseph, speak into it.
Well,
yeah, we were there.
Do what?
We were at Kempo.
Well, now you go ahead and go keep on doing what you're doing. I'll tell part of what I remember on some of mine. You go ahead. Because when I landed, I had a different feeling than what you had.
Well, I'll tell a little bit more.
Okay.
Then you wake yourself up and start talking. Well, anyhow, Incheon, from Incheon to Kempo Airfield was probably about 8 miles, something like that. And we went from there to Sewell, which is across a little river. Well, I think it was the Hahn River or something. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But it took us about 10 days to fight our way from Incheon to Sewell, and I think it was probably about 15 or 18 miles.
And the MacArthur predicted 6 months.
Yeah.
To fight that distance, but we made it in 10 days.
We made it in 10 days. Now that was the Marine Corps. Now we're the only ones that landed there. I don't remember any army anywhere around there.
You had no trouble landing.
Oh, yes, we
did. Well, it was a lot of fire.
Yes.
Yeah, you know.
That's what I was going to tell. I was going to tell the difference.
Oh,
yeah. I was on the same ship he was on, apparently.
Okay. Go ahead and tell about the fire now.
Well,
when I first landed,
I was on a different ship than what Johnny was on. And the first thing I saw was a Corsair had come right by our ship and had crashed into the ocean. And about hit some of the ships. Of course, that didn't set too well with me, you know. It's the first I've ever seen a war.
I kept saying
to myself, well, you know, I don't know if I can kill these people or not. They've done nothing to me. You know, and killing somebody has something to think about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't know if I could kill these people. Well, we landed. When we landed, I wasn't on the same one with Johnny, because we didn't get stuck. We got up on shore. And then I saw some two or three Marines laying around dead. And you change your mind about whether you kill somebody or not, you know, because
Americans,
because you know that you could be next.
Mm-hmm.
And so it didn't take me long to change my mind about them, you know, about whether I could kill somebody or not.
Well, the first thing about something like that is you don't think of it as a person. The only thing you're firing at is a target.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ever see nobody 10 feet away that you're face to face. Once a great while. But most of the time it's a target, and you're shooting a target. So there's no real face-to-face shooting unless you come to hand-to-hand,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then you don't care what anybody looks like.
That's right.
You've got one thing on your mind, and that's to survive.
Then after Sewell and Kempo, we fairly well had a maid, because we were supposed to go to Wonsan to make an invasion there, above the 38th parallel. When we got up Wonsan, and the place was so heavily mined that we couldn't get in. And this is kind of funny in a way. So if we stayed out there while the Navy cleared the mines away, and when we did get in there, Bob Hope was there to greet us. Yes, he was.
Yeah.
He was there
and
to greet us.
So sure.
The ROK, the Republican Korean Army, had already taken that by the time we got the mines here. So we all got to see Marilyn Maxwell and Bob Hope. And then we went on up to Hung Nam.
Yep.
And from there, we was on our way up to the Chosin Reservoir.
That's where it gets sticky.
The big fighting from there.
That was the first division that went up the center.
We had 15,000 men going up there. And we got up there, and we heard from the radio, over the radio, it's the elements of the 1st Marine Division are encircled by the Chinese and have very slim chance of any of them coming out alive. Now this was really real, John. What it was, they had 10 divisions against our one, which was outnumbered 10 to 1.
Well,
there were 15,000 of us. They had over 120,000 Chinese around us.
Well, the 15,000 that we had was including Australians, British Marines, and quite a few Greeks and Turks. But yeah, most of what was up to Chosen Reservoir was Marines.
And then one of my episodes was, that I can tell you about, was Johnny had already gone up to the Hagaroo, which is 19-mile difference between Coterie and Hagaroo.
Hagaroo is a pretty big town for that place over
it's
there.
It's right by a big high mountain. And anyhow, we was, old Chesty Puller, Colonel Puller, was back at Coterie. And Johnny and him had already gone up, fought their way up. Well, in the meantime, the Chinese had cut the lines between all along between Hagaroo and Coterie. And we was truck drivers for the tank battalion, which supplied the, tanks. And we're carrying napalm, gas, ammo, whatever, troops. So Colonel Drysdale was in charge of the British Royal Marines. And they wanted the British Royal Marines to go from Coterie up to Hagaroo. Well, truck drivers were going to take them up there and some tanks. They had a lead tank and some tanks in between. And there was 176 of them, I believe. And we was on the way up. When we started out, we left under machine gun fire. I had to fight our way out from where we was. All along this was only 19 miles. I believe it was 19 miles or 11. I don't know exactly which.
Now you're talking about a road that's only about 15 feet wide.
Yeah, it's only big enough for a one truck.
And it's not paved, it was rock.
Old fashioned country road.
Exactly what it was.
Narrow.
And we got up to about halfway up, and they cut our convoy in half. Well, I was one of the first trucks up in the lead of it, behind a tank. And the others turned around and went back. So that left half of us, of the convoy there, of the British Royal Marines in us. And then we fought our way up there and stopped. It took us all day from break of morning to way after dark before we were to go this 19 mile. Because we was fighting all the way. Some of us right along the road, right along the shoulder. Others might have been 40, 50 yards away or so forth, you know. One incident we had hand-to-hand combat with them. And so we finally got, it started getting dark, and we was pulling, we could see Hagaroo and the airfield they was making with the lights out there, and we could see them. And so they said, well, don't fall, we're coming into an army camp. Well, the army had been pushed out, and we didn't know it. And the Chinese had put machine gun in place all along the bank of the mountain. So they said, don't shoot, we're coming into. So we got our guns, rifles down. And the first thing I know, a lieutenant with the British Royal Marines sat right next to me, got hit right through the head, right through the glass. And so everybody scrambled to get off the truck. And we got off the trucks and got alongside the road. And they had a machine gun up there, and the machine gun bullets hitting, I guess, no more than 15 inches from myself. And I think the only thing that really saved me was some Marine had a BAR a little bit further down and started shooting toward that machine gun.
The BAR is a Browning automatic rifle. Shoots 20 rounds in a clip.
In a big clip. And all we had was a 8-shot rifle. Okay. And so he started shooting back at him and drove him away. So some of the British Royal Marines says, fall back a little bit, they're getting too close, so we fell back. Well, me and another fellow by the name of Bill Martin, the truck driver, and about six British Royal Marines have fell back. And we got in little pockets, like, you know, to kind of protect ourselves. And the Chinese had come down, so that separated us from the main group. So the only thing we saw to do was head toward those lights. We were heading toward kind of easing our way toward them lights, you know, at the airfield. Then all of a sudden, we were stopped by a Marine, challenged us to not to move, you know, want us to identify ourselves. I told him who we were, and he said, well, don't move, you're in the middle of a minefield. Yeah, we would. So we did not move at all, believe me. And they came out and got us in. Next day we found out, well, my truck was all shot up, and Johnny said they pulled it in, brought it back up in, and somebody else drove it back in. And most of all, the British Royal Marines were killed or captured, including Colonel Drysdale, the one in charge. But he later on, he escaped from them. But so me and another Marine truck driver and about six British Royal Marines made it through that night out of 176. There's only about eight of us made it through. So I was kind of blessed and kind of lucky, you know, at that, because out of that many, the others were killed or captured.
This was in the later part of November.
And temperature was 32 below zero all this time.
And they figured out since we were over there that the wind blowing. See, this was a mountain.
Yeah, right.
And
okay.
It was way up there. In fact, you can see some of the trees on there. There's no trees on it, just scrub. Mm. And it was 32 degrees below zero. And the wind chill, but the fact that they figured that out, and it figured to be 116 degrees below zero. You couldn't touch any metal.
You stick right to it.
And when you try to pull it off, you'd pull in and all.
And men were, a lot of men were freezing to death. I mean, they had infantry boys when coming back, they made them shake each other every 5 minutes because some of them had rest, was so exhausted they sat down to rest and they fell asleep and froze to death.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to shake each other. Of course, you didn't have a house or anything to go into. I mean, you was up in the mountains.
Right.
I mean, it was barren.
And what time of the year was this?
This was November. And it turned out to be one of the coldest time we ever had on record in North Korea. At that particular time in North Korea.
So where did y'all like stay at?
In the mountains. Just like outside.
In a hole.
In a hole. Right? A lot of people,
a lot
of boys come in. I got a piece of shrapnel in my foot, and I never report it. But I was going to go to the medics to get it taken care of, you know. And I got over there, and I saw men with legs blown off and arms blown off. And I was about to stand in the line for that, you know. So I went on back and tied a little piece of rag around and forgot it, you know, because that was hardly nothing. But over there, they had to take a lot of their legs off of them and their arms from freezing. Now, the Chinese also had a hard too because they had tennis shoes. And that kind of was, they had tennis shoes on. That's the first thing they would take off of a dead Marine would be his boots.
Mm-hmm.
But they had tennis shoes on. And if you want opium, of course, then we didn't know what opium was. We wasn't,
yeah, 18,
drugs. We
wasn't year old.
Up to date on drugs, you know. And we was only 18, 19 years old. But every Chinese we found, I don't know if you remember those little bugle bags of smoking tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
They had little pouches about that same size, crammed full of opium. And they would get so doped up that they would send, they'd come over the hill by maybe 10,000 at a time, hollering and screaming, you're going to die, and shooting. And they didn't know what they were doing, they're so doped up, you know. But they had 120,000 of them. And we killed 43,000 coming out of there. And we lost half of ours, 15,000.
We got about 12,000 casualties out of 15,000.
Out of 15,000, but like I said, they had 120,000. There's all around the same. When you went, you had to fight. It didn't make any difference. Plus, you had to fight the cold.
And you talk about where did we stay.
And to open a can of beans, you had to we had K-bars then. Like knives, you know,
and
you dug a couple of beans out of time because it was so hard.
It was solid ice.
Everything was so frozen. You know.
But we had.
And you said out there day and night.
Our living quarters, the Chinese really attacked us on November the 27th. And that's when they come into us as an army. And they had orders to annihilate the 1st Marine Division. And the general in charge of the Chinese armies up there, he told his people that if they could whip the 1st Marine Division, was the best that we had over there, that they wouldn't have any trouble with the rest of them.
Well, there's never been done this ever. And they were ordered to the Nolly, that's right, to the last man. Yep. I mean, that was their orders.
But we brought out most all of our dead.
No, we didn't bring all of that out. We brought most of them
out. I said most.
Yeah.
Because we had to bury some of them.
Because we had to bury some of them.
Yeah. But we brought out most of our dead and all of our wounded.
Well, a lot of times we were truck drivers, and we didn't have ammo. Everything was dropped to us by air. Because, you know, a bridge was dropped to us by air. Food, ammo was dropped by airplanes. You know, if it wasn't for them, we'd have never made it. There is no way. And we would be having dead on back of our trucks. And some of them get hit. Other people get hit, and we'd put them on top. A lot of times we had to stop and take the dead off and put the dead on top of the wounded so they wouldn't be killed too, you know. And it is, I'm going to tell you, whoever said war was hell, you really cannot picture it unless you go through it. I can say it all day and tell you how bad it is and how people blown apart and body parts everywhere, and you see dead here, and in the summertime you see them stinking dead over there, you know. And there's nothing worse than a dead odor from a dead person. In the summertime, there is nothing worse. But you just don't know until you've been there. I could tell you all day long. And I've got a little thing that I've had nightmares since Korea. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing I can do about it. Psychiatrist got me on Prozac. It helps. I used to wake up in the middle of the night 5 or 6 times and could never go back to sleep, couldn't get up my mind. But he's got me now where I can at least go back to bed and maybe 15, 20 minutes fall asleep again. But it was
I would imagine the whole time you were there was a nightmare.
Yep. And I just hope to God that none of these young fellows like him ever had to do it. Never. Because you cannot picture it in your mind.
Well, you've got to figure out how cold it's 30 below zero. Mm-hmm. And with the wind blowing 40 miles an hour, then you're staying in a hole in the ground with maybe a what we call a park. It's a heavy like overcoat, put the weatherproof, but it's really not. And everybody was, you know, freezing. A lot of Chinese froze in their foxholes. A lot of our boys froze in their foxholes. And you're supposed to, if you can, change socks every day because your feet sweat. Mm-hmm. Well, when you've only got one pair of socks, what you going to do? You know, you can't change socks. I took my boots off one time and had ice between my toes. And we were, like Joe said, we were truck drivers for the first tank battalion. And we went with them wherever they went.
Wherever they went, we had to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If they were on the line, we were on the line, because we had to keep them supplied with fuel, ammunition, and the reservoir.
Operate.
The reservoir has been compared to a lot of battles, and they say it's the biggest, the most fiercest battle that's been fought since since way back.
Well, they compare it to, in a lot of your books you read today, they compare it to Custer's Last Stand and the Alamo. Mm-hmm. Because the reason they compare it to that was because of the numbers that we was fighting, you know.
You know, when you look at Gettysburg, you've got at least a fair balance on each side of numbers, whereas...
But,
well, when you take 15,000 against 120,000,
that's
a lot of people.
And then you realize people came out of it alive. It really is...
And we would have never got out of there had it been for the Air Force and the Marines dropping us supplies and bombing them. There's no way we could have made that.
Of course, there is a gull-shaped wing, a winged plane. The wings come down. You've seen the land on carrier on history programs, things like that. That's what Navy and the Marine Corps supported us with. We were ground troops, and they'd come in, they'd strafe, and they'd drop napalm. Napalm is a jelly gas. When it hit the ground, it exploded and scattered fire airplanes.
In fact, you can get on you and you can go into water and come up and you'll still be burning.
Well, quite possible.
You just spread.
Right.
You just, you know.
Did they use napalm in World War II?
Yeah. They used
I didn't know when they started, if they had
developed it in World War II, and they had they used it in a lot of flamethrowers and a lot of tanks carried it, the flamethrowing tanks. And it was not a, I never wanted to be a flamethrower operator, because you got two tanks on your back.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is compressed gasoline and jelly, and the other one I think is air or something.
Yeah, pressure.
And when you fire that thing, it strikes a match.
Right.
And it shoots it on out there.
I'm going to take all things down. I saw, though, you know, we had a rough assault of the Chinese. I'm not taking up on by no means, believe me. But I remember where, up at North Hill at the Chosen Reservoir, they had a sniper up there, kept firing in our tents.
That was East Hill.
The colonel's tents, you know.
That was East Hill.
East Hill, yeah. He kept firing into the, on the, where the big boys got for the tents, in their tent. And he never did hit nobody. But the colonel sent some Marines up there early that morning to dig him out. He was hidden in the snow. And they found him in a hole with a piece of cardboard and the snow on top of him. He was shooting out of a hole this side. The reason I'm telling you this, and this is because this happens to do with drugs. They pulled him down that hill. And from here on down, his legs were pure blue. By the time they got him down the hill, they didn't realize it. But the skin came off clean through his bones. The man was still alive. He was still shooting. And they took him over to the colonel's tent, and the colonel would not take him in there. They said, take him out of here. Well, they took him over for about a long way, got warm, and of course he died. Then the colonel came over and said, that's why we didn't want him earlier, because as soon as he got warm, he was going to die. He was living off his opium. Mm-hmm. He could feel nothing. He didn't know it. I mean, that skin coming off his face, he didn't know it coming off. He was so doped up with opium that So children nowadays, every mess of drugs, they'd be surprised how much it can really, really affect them. They don't really know. And believe me, we could have all the open we wanted, because it was all over the place.
Now imagine they would have liked for you to do it, had it.
Wasn't
Johnny?
Yep.
Well, about the only thing we wanted to do is stay awake, because they didn't. We had very little fighting during the daytime. They'd snipe at us and all this.
Yeah, most of them
were at night.
Yeah, and then they'd drop mortars. What have you got on yours? How much, what numbers?
Of course, we didn't have stuff like that in Vietnam, like gunships and helicopters. It was just out.
Whoa.
That was the first time jets were introduced into the war, and MiG and the They have one jet we have, they call it the Shooting Star. And that's the first time I ever saw a jet.
Yeah.
That's when it attaches at night.
Yeah, just before dark. They would,
just before dark or early morning.
They'd start blowing bugles, sirens, not sirens, but whistles, and yelling and everything.
No.
And you could see them come off the side of that hill like a bunch of ants, you know.
Mm.
And of course, we would.
And they'd come at tanks that way.
Yeah, we'd fire everything we had. Yeah. We'd lay down a wall of fire. So it was hard for them to get through it.
But I'll tell you, it's just some of them poor Marines come in frozen. I had the amputated legs right there and there.
Mm-hmm.
It was just about making cry. It was about making a grown man cry.
We could tell you a lot more about it.
You just want to believe.
You got any questions that you want to know about?
We are drafted, or
no?
Marine
Corps. Only volunteers.
But we was volunteers and not volunteers.
Hmm.
We were went in 48, and we do get out.
In 51.
Well, I was at Lejeune. I mean, at Del Mar. I came back from Guam. Been over there for 16 months. I came back and took a leave, and they called me back from leave and said, cancel my leave, so you got to come back. They didn't tell us why. And they told us then, it says, you're going to go to Japan. Well, of course, everybody knew what that meant. I said, no, I said, you can't do that. I said, I ain't got enough, you had to have a year to go. I said, I haven't got a year to go.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, you've been extended, convenience of the government.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I had to go.
Yeah, but, I had to.
See how many hours went to
y'all's
training?
Yeah, we've been. And let me tell you something, boys. Training does make a difference. It makes one big difference. If your life depends on it, it makes one big difference.
Well, we used to hate our drill instructors.
Yes.
Because they were, it's not like you go to a good place now. They, if you don't, I'll call my mama and tell her, you know, and she'll come down here with a president or somebody. If you're marching out there in boot camp, and you get out of step, the DIs, drill instructors, have different ways of getting your attention.
Yes.
A lot of times, you had these jungle type hats on, they call them fifth helmets. They'd lift that thing up, they always carry a swagger stick with them.
Mm-hmm.
They'd lift that helmet up and whack you out on top of the head.
When we went through boot camp, they were God. I mean, that was it. They were God. You know. In fact, after we got out of the boot camp and back home here, they were still kind of rough because they even marched some of them into the swamps and they died. And that's when a lot of that training stops, you know, like we've gone through, because they could hit you, they could slap you, they could do anything they wanted to you, and you couldn't do nothing, you know. But of course, like I said, once we got out, and then we saw where in boot camp at Press Island, they marched some of them right into the swamps and they died. Well, that's been a little bit too far, Master, but they don't get that kind of, they don't have that kind of authority no more.
Everything's different.
Yeah, they don't have that kind of authority anymore. But they was.
The warfare is different too now.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
Yeah.
But you could stand up there and slap you and you just have to take it.
When you were in Korea, what was camp life like?
We didn't get no camp life.
Well, the only time we had anything you might be compared to a camp life was after we come down from the reservoir and went down to South Korea. We stayed in the rear while we got reinforcements and regrouped before we started back north again. Now, when we was down there, we had tents.
Yeah.
Of course, they'd be out in the dirt street, and they'd give you, if you wanted it, everybody got a ration of beer, I think, a week. I think it was six cans, I believe it was. But it was 3% beer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't nothing to it.
I got my first Coke then when I got
and
back.
And Coca-Cola's. Yeah, that's where we got Allen. But back at the rear, it was just like being at any base camp that you were living in tents and things like that.
It was great.
Because there wasn't anybody shooting at you back there. You know.
You even got hot food.
Yeah.
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 But from the time we landed at Incheon, Wapidoo, we were fighting continuously until we went on ships to go for Wonsan to make that landing where Bob Hope was. And then when after that, we were fighting again continuously until we got out of the Chosin Reservoir. So there was 9 months that we was fighting right straight. And we didn't know anything about liberty. I mean, resting, recreational, what they call it now. But they said the Army was going back and getting the breaks. Getting a break and then go back to line. I'm not running the Army down by no means. I don't mean that because they was there. They died.
Died.
But we didn't get anything called rest and recreation at all. Nothing.
Our rest and recreation.
Didn't get no cooks. Didn't get nothing like that.
Well, our rest and recreation was drilling, cleaning your weapon, and cleaning the area. Make sure everything was squared away.
My rest and recreation.
That was different between the Marine Corps and the Army. Thing.
Right.
They were really lax, but they figured if we got lax, then we would just fall apart.
Okay. Yeah. In the 9 months of fight, living conditions, sleeping conditions, living conditions.
Where you found
Eden,
a place?
Eden.
Wherever you found a place. Wait a
minute. Where did you take a shower or a bathroom?
Take a shower.
You get up there, a lot of times they'd make a latrine. They would go out here and dig a ditch.
Joe, we don't know what a latrine is.
Well, it's a place where they put a big hole, and they got a few places where you can sit down and use the bathroom. That's it, right out in the open.
It's better not staying there long.
I mean, it's no protection around it.
Well, I think as cold as you were describing, I'm not sure you want to...
Yeah. Well,
you'd be stuck there forever.
You did the best you could, and they also said don't ever pick up and taste yellow snow. Because
don't eat yellow snow.
Somebody urinated and turned yellow. Mm-hmm. Turn yellow. It's that's awful to be saying that. But
no, that's true.
That's an old saying.
Yeah.
You don't do that. But you would up in the, at the Chosen Reservoir, you couldn't dig. You couldn't dig a ditch as you could.
No, the ground was frozen.
Because it was so hard and frozen.
You'd use a grenade to blow a hole in the ground.
You would, any place, you, if you got a hole this deep, you was doing good. So a lot of times you'd find the natural terrain of the land, you know, and get up close to it, or something blocking the wind from one side or the other. Then you try to find your cuddle up there the best you could. And else you'd been attacked. And of course, you forget about that cold.
And another thing, too, is that up there where we were at the Chosen Reservoir, there were no trees.
No.
Just scrub stuff.
You can see them.
You know, we're too high up in altitude.
Yeah, you see them.
Yeah, but there's
a map, a book right under. I'll show you. If you open the back of it, it'll show you a good picture of the Chosen Reservoir. And that's a good to see any trees.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it was. Wherever you could.
Mine stopped.
You like to sleep right here, you like to sleep right there. Wherever you could.
Now, what kind of. Did you have sleeping bags? Just a blanket?
Yeah,
water?
I had sleeping bags, yes.
Yeah.
But then, a lot of times they don't want you to fully throw your sleeping bag all the way up because at one time some Chinese had slipped through and killed the boys, some boys in their sleeping bag at night.
Yeah, I didn't. I only slept in a sleeping bag about 2 nights.
So you're kind of leery about getting in there, you know.
But I did get out.
And not be able to get out fast enough. Because they did kill some army boys over there with knives one night while I was sleeping in their bags.
So you just wrapped up in blankets?
So you had
the one
best
blanket.
You could.
You had one blanket
and one sleeping bag.
And one sleeping bag. The sleeping bag was like goose feathers down.
Mm-hmm.
And down.
But the one thing we had on our side was use.
Mm-hmm.
Today I could never take it. I could never take that cold again. I'm from Columbus, Ohio, and there's no way in the world I would live up there.
But
left.
Right.
If it'd be anywhere else, it'd be further south.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I despise cold. I cannot stand it. And most everybody up there got frostbite.
Mm-hmm.
He got frostbite, I got frostbite, and got people. You know, legs and feet, you know. Right now, I'm having time with the VA because sometimes I'll be able to walk maybe from here to 5 times the distance of trucks out there, but I might not be able to walk back because my hips have got degenerated and arthritis from the cold, and you just can't replace it with a hip. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'd go up and get a hip bone operation, but you can't do it. That don't work that way. And they tell me eventually I won't be able to walk.
I think you're going to ask a question or two.
Okay, fine.
I was wondering, did y'all have like a preacher that probably got around and stuff?
Oh, we had chaplains, yes. In fact, we had one in our platoon, and he was studying to be a minister.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Yahn, Y-A-H-N. Good old boy.
Very good old boy.
But we'd be out of something, and he was the platoon scrounger. And of course the Marines didn't have anything like what the Army had. So he would go to where the Army depot was. And he would literally steal stuff from the Army. But when he come back, we'd tell him that was stealing. He said, no, it wasn't. They wasn't using it, so I'm just going to put it to better use. Because when we was down south one time, he brought us a crate of oranges, I think it was. And he was studying to be a preacher. But every company had a chaplain and let's say the company had a chaplain and they had a priest and they had all the different religions.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it all didn't matter who was talking to who, you know.
In fact, the boy,
I know who I was talking to. I was talking direct line.
Yeah.
Boy,
yeah.
You know?
In fact, the boy he was talking to about Yahn, that was starting to be a preacher, they came up and took him back and send him back to the States so he'd become a preacher. But I got my first Holy Communion, and I didn't even know what Holy Communion was.
Mm-hmm.
And a boy said, come on, I got a priest over there, let's go over and go to Holy Communion. I was a young kid, I was dumb, I didn't even know what Holy Communion was. And it's the Catholic Holy Communion. So I go up there, and I received Holy Communion. And I didn't know what religion I was. But it was a chance to ask for a little bit of help, so I did, I guess. Mm-hmm.
To what extent did religion play for you guys?
What?
To what extent did religion play? How important was it to you?
It played a big part in me. But I prayed all the time. Just let me see the sunrise, you know, another day. And don't let that guy shoot me, because I ain't going to shoot him if he don't shoot me. Well, that's not true. But I did, when we were at the, when we were in battle, most everybody, I'd say 99.9% of the people would pray. I've even seen atheists say, thank God, you know.
Amen.
Yep. But he claimed to be an atheist, but when he says thanks God, you know, that's the end of that. You know? But we had, when we stayed at the reservoir, well, I was up there about 2.5 weeks, something like that. Well, I got up there before the rest of them did. When we got up there, the Chinese hadn't attacked yet. We had 3 or 4 days, because they got most of the division up there. They're never going to pounce on us. So I was up there 3 or 4 days before, and they had a, we were living like people then. They had tents set up.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 8 men to the tent. It wasn't snowing then either. Like late November, it wasn't snowing. But it seemed like after the rest of the division got up there, it really turned cold and the wind started blowing and everything. And we had a mess tent set up. I guess it was probably 200 or 300 feet from where our place was, wasn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I went over there with a canteen cup, and they had hot coffee in there. And I got a canteen cup full of boiling coffee right out of one of the big steel urns. Walked back to my foxhole, and it was frozen solid.
And you might think he's kidding, but he's not.
It was frozen solid.
He is not kidding. You can have a mess of hot coffee, and by the time you got from me to you, that coffee is just very warm.
And we were, we,
and
I found
it's,
a,
it's frozen.
I found a gallon of crushed pineapple. Oh, it's supplied them. And we had warming tents set up too. There's some of them in some of these books you see. And we had these little tin heaters in there. Now, you probably don't know anything about them, but he does. And it's got 6-inch round stovepipe on it. Mm-hmm. It was about 5 joints. It goes out the top of the tent. Well, it was so cold over there that diesel fuel would not run through the pipe. It was a rough pipe and wouldn't run through it. So being Marines, and we knew how to improvise. So we went and got 110-octane fuel, gasoline. Now that would burn. That would run through that thing. But you had to be real careful about lighting it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that stove cherry red, 3 pipe lengths high, and the only place it wasn't any snow was right around where the pipe went out the top of it. The rest of the tent was covered
with
snow.
And you were still cold.
And it was still freezing in that tent.
And you were still cold, really not.
Because it wasn't in, you know, a tent. What insulation's that?
Oh, it does cut the wind off, and
yep,
that's about it.
Well, where religion comes in, I never was back then, really. I wasn't brought up in a religious family. And my father was kind of religious. I heard him say prayers when he was home, but he drank a lot. And half time he was home, his mother chased him off. And his 10 kids, you know, and kind of rough. And so we really didn't have too much religion, but over there, I think I found some. I think of God a lot when things are quiet, and I think of him a lot right after all hell broke loose. But I can't say during that time when we was fighting fast and furious, I cannot say I was thinking of it because I was just too busy trying to protect myself.
Sure.
You know?
I prayed a lot.
But he did bring us to it. I realize now he and his own boss, so there was no, no way. I shouldn't be here today talking to you. I don't mind telling you, I should not be here.
Yeah.
Not with all those Chinese and all them killing
animals. Well, I'll give you an example.
There's no way we should be here.
How the battle was in the, what was it? 10 years of the Vietnam War. Was it Vietnam War 10 years?
Yeah.
Right. 2 years
yeah.
long. They had 53,000 points of people killed.
Mm-hmm.
in the 3 years of the Korean War, we had 53,000 something.
54,000.
I didn't tell you a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah. In 3 years, and there was only about 18 months of that. It was real fierce fighting. Half of it was sniping back.
Yeah.
You know, when it got up back up to the.
Same tag.
Yep. Yeah,
and also, to this day, there is more men missing from Korea than there is any other war, and we've got over 8,000 still unaccounted for.
Yeah, there's over 8,000
unaccounted for from Vietnam.
Missing.
But there's over 8,000 still missing from Korea that we cannot find. No account of.
Well,
of course, they were slaves. They were made slaves and taken to Russia and China, and they died in slave camps, I'm sure.
Well, and another thing, too, that a lot of people don't realize, if you're out there on clear ground and a 120-millimeter mortar hits 3 or 4 feet from you, you're missing.
Yeah, because you're blown to pieces,
missing.
But there still is a lot of 8,000 of them.
Oh, yeah.
There's not that many.
What I'm saying is you still got to take in consideration, you know, those.
You could say maybe 400 or 500 was blown apart and never accounted for, but
you
know,
1,000.
Yeah, we might know 8,000. We've over 8,000 hunting some still missing from Korea. More missing from there than any other war.
Yep, even the Second World War.
Yeah, unaccounted for, and they died in slave camps. I'm sure.
The Second World War.
Russia got them, and that's where.
The Second World War, they had when the Marines and the Army. When they made a landing at Iwo Jima and Peleliu and Tuar and places like that, after they made the landing, they had some fierce fighting, hand-to-hand combat and everything else. But after about a week or two, they had that island secured. That was the end of it. They sent them back to Australia for rest and relaxation.
I didn't
realize this until a VA man, who's the Veterans Administration, was telling us that. He says, you boys don't realize that from the time you landed to the time you left, you were fighting over a year. I said, well, yeah, but I assumed World War II was the same. He said, no. He says, they would go in and land at Guadalcanal, be there for 2 months, then they would not be in combat again for 9 months. You know. It didn't occur to me. I just thought they was fighting the whole time.
Dad fought for a year in Italy, and then he fought through France, Germany, and Belgium. France, Germany, and Austria. And it was pretty steady.
Yeah.
Well,
both places.
That was a different army.
You see, like Japan, though.
That was an entirely different army.
Like the Philippines taking Guam, or they get a break after that. Then they take Saipan and get another break. You know, and it never occurred. I just thought they were fighting all the time. Until he pointed out.
The war in the South Pacific was entirely different than the war in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing the Americans and the Europeans make too is the mistake that we all make is we think we can predict and understand an Oriental, and you cannot do it. They're entirely different. They think different. Their religion's different.
Everything
about them is different.
They have no use for life, because they think they'd die
and go to heaven if they died in battle.
But they do not value life at all.
Yeah, try to help a lot of them.
It don't make any difference to them whether they're dead or whether they die or not.
Any comments on Harry Truman, President of the United States?
Yeah.
This should be interesting.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Harry Truman.
Well,
let's say, but
we'll go back.
I don't really have a lot of respect for Harry Truman.
Well, we'll go back to when he extended us that extra year. Joe had less than a year
months,
to go.
Yeah, 7 months ago.
And I had 9 months to go when he extended me another year, Joe another year. Well, of course, we didn't like Harry for that. And then another thing that especially the Marines didn't like him for, he told some newspaper reporters that it was reported all over the United States and the whole world.
While we was in Korea.
Yep, that the Marine Corps was nothing but a police force, and Korea was nothing but a police action.
Yes, and we was.
And one of our first machine guns that set up on the beach at Incheon, it had written in white on the side of it, and put a sticker or something. It says Harry's Police Force.
Well, what he apologized for, what he really apologized for, was accusing the Marine of the second propaganda machine next to Russia. Now, he said that while we was in combat.
Yeah.
But he did apologize to the American people over that.
We didn't think much of him.
So therefore, I will say that I didn't think too much of him. But
and another one that the Marine Corps didn't think much of, and that was General Douglas MacArthur.
Well, that was obvious. The next question I would have asked. What do you think is good on that?
Well,
good on MacArthur.
All Marines called him Dugout Doug. The only time that he would be close to the lines is when we had taken a city, and he went for a photo op.
Yep.
That's what he went for. In fact, when he landed at the Philippines, when he said, "I shall return," they always said that what he said was, "With faith in God and a handful of Marines, I shall return." But they changed it all around. But when he went in back into Manila, where he went to go ashore after they took it, he went ashore one time and he didn't like the pictures. It wasn't right. So he put everybody where they're supposed to go and waded ashore again. Of course, he went and waded in the water, you know, that deep. And he had his sunglasses on, that old corn cob pipe. Now, I didn't think much of MacArthur.
The reason I don't think much of MacArthur.
Well, he wanted the bombs. He wanted the bomb Manchuria with A-bombs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I might have found some a little bit odd or really wrong, and maybe I'm wrong in the way I feel. But he denied there was Chinese that entered the war in Korea.
Yeah.
And we had them up there captured. I mean, we had been fighting them. We had them captured, lost mm-hmm. captured them. And he says there's no Chinese in Korea.
He said they were only volunteers.
Well, man, they had a hell of a lot. Well, I gotta say, because they were Chinese, we had them.
You know, could tell the difference
between
the
Chinese and the Koreans. So, but he was back there saying no, there is no Chinese had intervened yet. And all this time we had hundreds of them. To me, he was lying not just to us, but to
many of us,
we knew that.
Yeah.
But it was lying to the American people. I don't even care for that.
I
think Eisenhower was a good general.
He was a good man in the Second World War.
I wasn't involved in any way with Eisenhower during the war. There was nothing that I had any contact with Eisenhower over, you know, anything he'd done, I guess. But from what I understand, Eisenhower was a great general and a great man. But he was in Korea, so, and I can't condemn somebody that wasn't there or says, you know, to me, as far as I know, to my knowledge, Eisenhower was a great general.
He was a good tactician, too.
I think during World War II, from what I read, he was extremely good. But I can't really comment on it because I have nothing, I don't know. I mean, he had nothing to do with us. Yeah. But I think he was a great man.
Any other leaders that stand out in your mind, either on a very positive way or on a very negative way, for the Korean?
McCarthy. I didn't have too much, but I think he was a sympathy to the communists. You know, I
well,
remember it.
Senator?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Call him.
We didn't talk about that. Yeah, that'll be the Red Scare of Senator McCarthy was in the United States Senate.
Yeah, McCarthy was.
Yeah,
we'll be talking about that.
I didn't care too much for him because of that.
Some of the
because
most
we were fighting the communists, and we weren't doing too little here, I don't think.
Other than political, some of the outstanding people that we were personally associated with way down the line was Chesty Puller.
Yeah.
And O.P. Smith, a big general, war general. And Chesty Puller, he was a Marine, and he was about 5'6" and weighed about 180 pounds, looked like a little battle rooster.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And he always strutted around, and the Marine Corps, they don't know anything about this going around and trying to encircle somebody and cut them off. They charge straight ahead. You know? And of course, you get a lot more catches that way, but they take their objective a lot of times. And O.P. Smith, we called him Outpost. because he could stick you on some god-awful places to man a machine gun. I may have went one night up on the top of a little hill in the graveyard. And then when they plant somebody over there, they put him in the ground, they put a plate of his favorite food out there. And for the man, they put his little old hat out there and his favorite pipe so he can take his smoke and his hat and eat a meal when he goes to heaven. Of course, the dogs at nighttime got that.
Yeah.
But they believe the best of it. And that's what I say. You can't figure out what an Oriental's going to do. There's no way.
I will tell you one thing, though, that I sincerely believe. I found out, and I'm not gung-ho, and I'm not strictly Marine, but I do know when I was over there that I could rely on that man being next to me, and this man over here going to be here. He's not going to get up and move and leave me there.
You know, well trained.
I knew that. I mean, there was no thinking about it. I knew he'd be there. We got some Army boys with us up to Children Reservoir, and they fought with us. And some of them had to go back to their office, and they cried. They wanted to stay with us. They did want to stay with us. That's the truth.
They left their equipment.
He said they'd never seen anybody stick so tight. We don't have any choice.
That's right.
But I did know the man was over there, and that man was over here. So I knew it moved. Chinese going to come from me that way or this way. Can you like come out this way somewhere?
Well, see if you've got any more questions. We got that.
Do you have any good memories?
Yeah. The day I left there was a real good one. And a couple other times, long before we got into any real hard fighting, it was like a being on an Army post or something. And we didn't do much. We weren't getting shot at, nothing like that. And we'd make these short runs back to the fuel dump, get fuel and things like that for the tanks. But the rear echelon, that's the rear, always had it pretty good. You could usually find somebody that was selling ice cream, you know, PX or something like that, because it set up PXs. And the Red Cross at Incheon, when we landed at Incheon, they set up coffee and donuts. Coffee, nickel cup, donuts, nickel piece. That's what the Red Cross done for us.
Charge you for it.
Questions? We don't think much of the Red Cross.
I can see that.
Of course, they've done good.
Oh, yeah. Well, they didn't do good over there.
But it, all I can tell is, all I can tell you in closing this thing is what I'm the way I feel is. I just hope and pray that no young man like him ever has to go over to die for another country. If he dies for this country, fine. But I think we're losing too many good American boys at other countries that doesn't appreciate a bit more. Saudi Arabia, I do not believe the people died there. Vietnam, I don't believe the people appreciate the boys that died there.